You're listening to Dirty Feet, a dance podcast. I'm Allison Elizabeth Burns. Today I'm going to be talking about skin songs with Jessica Ruano. Jessica was first on the podcast back in 2016 when we were talking about the Gomeshi effect, which she created and directed. Now, this one is a collaboration between several different artists. Skin Songs is a dance theater piece. I'm getting a nod, so we're on the right direction. All right. And it was devised by Eleanor Crowder, Jackie Dutoy, Jessica Ruano, Lola Ryan, and Angela Schleihauf. Now, Jessica is here to talk about the work, how it was created, how it's being presented, and all that. It's kind of a unique piece. It's also part of the Tactics Main Stage series, which Exciting Cause was part of as well. It's actually being performed outside at Strathcona Park here in Ottawa. And the audience is invited to bring an audio device and headphones and listen to an audio recording of the performers while they perform live. So there's this kind of public, private, intimate experience that they're building. The promotional photos coming out of this piece, the four female performers are dressed in red dresses and red lipstick and a variety of footwear. And there is definitely a strong element of femininity in the work. I just want to take a second to read this. Skin Songs has been built over 5 years, starting in 2018, with the contributions of many artists engaged at different levels and, from what I understand, at different times. Between them all, we embody the experiences of queer, racialized, immigrant, cisgender, and transgender women. So let's start, Jessica. Let's start by talking about how you became involved in this show.
So I became involved in this show just through earlier conversations with Eleanor and Lola, who were the two women who originated this piece. And I was very interested in the work they were doing to explore what it's like to be a woman from various perspectives. And they, first of all, I saw this piece. It was back in, gosh, it must have been 2021, when the two of them were presenting it in Strathcona Park. And of course, as you know, this was at the height of the pandemic when things couldn't really be done so much indoors. So that's where the outdoor component came in. And at that point, they had spoken to both myself and Jackie Dutoit because they wanted to diversify the stories they were telling and show more experiences of what it's like to live female. And so at that point, we were invited to go and see the show with only Eleanor and Lola physically performing it, but our four voices were at this point involved. And again, part of the interesting thing about the show that came out of the pandemic was that Eleanor and Lola had wanted to put together a performance that felt very intimate, which was difficult to do when we were supposed to be physically distancing. And so Angela, actually, who is one of the co-creators and the sound designer, had the idea that the sound could be heard through audio devices with headphones. So you have that sort of very intimate experience of listening to the story in your own personal devices, but everyone's doing it at the same time, but seeing everything in a very public space. So, and that kind of went along with the theme of making our very private stories public, to say that these are the kind of stories we want to have out in the open. And so now when you see the show, again, you're wearing headphones, so, and you're following four dancers through Strathcona Park. And I think what's interesting about that is that while the audience is watching us, other people who aren't part of the show, who just happen to be at the park, are watching us and the audience. So it's that sense of the observers being observed, which is kind of a fun meta-theatrical thing we're playing with. And then it gives them an opportunity to sort of like reflect on their own stories as well, and how I guess they would feel sharing these things in a public space.
I find this discussion of public space broadly and also specifically in this context so interesting. I mean, public spaces are things where places where things can happen and things can surprise you, and anyone is welcome and anyone could be there. And then when we come to site-specific work, there's always a curiosity about the creation phase and the development versus the showing of it, because I'm going to make an assumption that you were in the park leading up to the actual performances beginning this month. So how has that been, working in a public space, rehearsing in a public space, and then performing in a public space?
I love performing in non-traditional spaces and creating in them, because you don't have to bring in props or set pieces or whatever else to create the world. The world's already been created for you. So when we're in Strathcona Park, for instance, there are all these different trees. There are oak trees and cedars and catalpa and lilac bushes. And all of these set pieces, in a way, have special meaning for us now. So when we go to that park, we associate different parts of our stories with those different trees and different spaces and the pathways and the water and all of those things. So, and I think for audiences as well, it sort of transforms the ordinary or the familiar into something unfamiliar, which is a very cool theatrical thing that can happen in non-traditional spaces. So I like that the world around us can inspire the theater that we're creating. And we did rehearse in the park every day during a rehearsal period, except for 2 days when the weather was a bit iffy. And then we just worked on parts of the show that were less reliant on the outdoor scene. But for the most part, yes, we were just responding to the nature around us and creating choreography that worked with the trees and with the different spaces, and considering, oh, how much do we want to be on the ground? How much do we want to be standing up? And you know, which parts do we want to be emerging from the trees or being hidden or being revealed? And all of that were possibilities for us in doing the staging for this show.
Yeah, let's dive into this content a little bit more, both in the audio, which I understand is voices as well as music, and in the visual, which is, I assume, you're not making sounds in person. You're just using your bodies, making movement, interacting with the space as you have described. So tell us a bit about, what both those elements look like, what could be expected from that performance, and also how they interact.
So Angela has been a part of the creation process pretty much since the beginning. Again, it was her idea to create this soundscape that would be completely pre-recorded. And she would also attend rehearsals, see what kind of movement was being created, and then sometimes go back to the soundscape and change aspects of the music or have more spaces where there was less text to make room for movement and or just a pause here and there. So she really was, in a sense, this, you know, the staging was inspired by the soundtrack, but then the movement that she saw in rehearsal also would help things shift sound-wise. So there was a real nice back-and-forth relationship there. And again, when we're hearing the music, we're able to move to it, to respond to it. So it's almost like another character having those sounds. And so when you're listening, it's a mix of our pre-recorded voices sharing some poetry, some prose, and some documentary style interviews, kind of like we're doing now. So Angela would interview each of us separately, ask us about, you know, our experiences being women, and then speaking more specifically about very unique aspects of our lives. So in my case, I talk about adopting as a queer solo parent and what that means to me. And so I go into my story, but I also talk about sort of my values around parenting and family and my desire to do things along a less traditional route. So that works its way into my story. And I think that the movement that's created, that we worked with, directorial consultant Kate Smith, who's done some great work with Skeleton Key Theater, and also Yvonne Kootz from the Ottawa Dance Directive came on to help us with some of the choreography. And so each of us, you know, created movements that are were reflective of the stories we were trying to tell. And then the music also has, you know, Angela created music that sort of went along with each of our personalities and our stories. So really there's this beautiful dialogue between our voices, the music and the movement, and how they all sort of like connect to give us, to describe ourselves more fully.
So obviously there is, you know, there's a theme of connection between the four performers and creators, and there's also a variety of differences between these four women and their experiences. There's a difference in age. There's a difference in life situation. There's a difference in the way that they, I assume, you relate to your femininity is all different. And I'm curious now about how, again, having not seen the show, about how you overlap this information, the literal and poetic stories and the physical movement. Are we listening to all of you while watching all of you? Are we focusing on one artist at a time? How does that kind of come to be, and how does that affect the material?
Yes, some people, when I was talking about the show and they wanted to be able to imagine it, they were saying, okay, so there's four dancers. Do we just pick one and follow that one person for the whole time? And I said, no, it's not quite like that. So in terms of the sound, yes, you're listening to one person at a time, but it's not as though you have, oh, that's one person's story, then the next one, the next one, the next one. No, all four stories are interspersed throughout the entire piece. So you go back and forth between each person. And what Angela's done, which is quite clever, is found those links between our stories. So for instance, there's one piece that Jackie says, uses the word denial, about being in denial about her body, her connection to her body. And then Lola starts on a piece that she does this entire poem about denial is this and denial is that. So Angela was able to find those sort of similarities, whether it's a certain word or phrase that was used or just thematically how things are linked. So there's things like that. And then, again, we all have very different stories. So I kind of mentioned a little bit about mine. Jackie talks about having grown up in South Africa and, again, not wanting to do that sort of traditional route and then, you know, deciding to immigrate to Canada and then eventually becoming pregnant with her little girl. And so she talks about the experience of giving birth. Eleanor grew up in Ireland and had to, you know, live her childhood during the famine and also moved to Canada. And then she talks also about the experience of giving birth. So even though, you know, there are very, very many differences between Jackie's story and Eleanor's story, they have those things that link them. And so you see pieces where in the show, you'll see the two of them up against a tree and they're telling that part of their story sort of in unison. Again, taking turns speaking, but you see that scene happening together. Likewise, both Lola and I are parents, but neither of us gave birth to our children. And we also identify with the LGBTQ community. Me as queer, Lola as trans. So again, even though our experiences being women and being parents are very different, we had those kind of links that we could play off of. So there's quite a few moments where Lola and I are sort of in unison or reflecting on each other. And then Jackie and I are more similar in age. Eleanor and Lola are older. So there's all these different ways that we link together at different times. And so when you're watching the piece, sometimes you're focusing on one particular performer. Sometimes you're seeing all four of us interact. Sometimes it's a duet. Sometimes it's a trio. So it's constantly shifting. And I would say in terms of the trajectory, usually around the beginning, you're kind of watching one person at a time. But as the show continues, you'll see more and more us coming together in this sort of supported, unified way. So by the end of the piece, we're all pretty much doing the same kind of movement to show that we're all connected, not necessarily, like, I guess, despite our differences, but also because of our differences, because that is the experience of, it's the experience of being women includes differences, right? Like, we never sort of go into these women's spaces assuming we all have the same experience so that, you know, we can all relate to each other in every possible way. And that's how the show begins, with that statement that, you know, even though we have, you know, we very different experiences, there's that sort of tiny essential element that helps you find that connection with women. Even if it, you can't describe it, even if you can't say quite what it is, but that's kind of what we have sort of, I guess, expressed closer to the end of the show through movement.
Great. That really, that sounds very intriguing and really paints a picture of where you're coming from, all four of you. Now I want to know where you start generating movement from that place, from these stories, these lived experiences. And again, just like this collaboration of working on something so personal as a group, how does that work? And what's the hierarchy in the rehearsal process when you're working with such personal material?
It's true. I mean, anyone who's done a collective or collaborative work knows that in some ways it's the best way of working because everyone's kind of working as a team and there isn't that hierarchy. But then also can be very challenging in terms of just making decisions. So we kind of took both approaches. So last year when we were working together, it was very much that collaborative approach. And a lot of the movement was actually improvised. We would just sort of listen to the soundtrack and then move as felt right. And then maybe offer suggestions like, oh, we could try this, we could try that, or we would try that out. And again, Angela was always there as a co-creator, but not performing in the show. And so she was able to offer some feedback in terms of what she was seeing and her experience being that outside person. But then this year, since we were very fortunate to get some funding from the Canada Council for the Arts, we were able to hire a couple of outside people. So as I mentioned, Kate Smith, Yvonne Kootz were able to be there, and they were able to give us feedback and sort of refine some of the movement that we've been exploring to say, like, yes, that works, keep it, or let's try something a bit more here, or that's a bit distracting, do less of that so the other person can kind of come forward. But they were very good about noting the work that we'd already done and not trying to push a different or new vision onto the piece, because again, we'd already done, you know, essentially years of work on it. So they came in really to just refine what we had, make offerings and work with us to create something that would be clearly communicated to the audience. Because, you know, again, when you're doing very personal pieces, some things can make sense to you or can be very clear to you. But we wanted to make sure that an audience who didn't know us or recognize our voices right away would be able to connect with our stories. And so we sort of had different ways of doing that. You know, for example, you know, it might be obvious to us that, oh, it's Jackie's voice in the recording, and so it's like Jackie's part. But again, an audience member might not know that. So in movement wise, we would bring Jackie sort of into the, like, to the forefront. So she'd be like closer to the audience. The rest of us would be kind of like supporting her in that. So it would be really obvious whose story it was at different times. So the movement, I think, really helped with that. And we were able to do the staging in a way that that made that very clear. Just to help the audiences along, so there's no sort of confusion about what's happening when.
So this is a very strong cast for this work in particular. I mean, I guess it makes sense that the work that this cast would make would be appropriate for the cast. But I know Lola as a dance artist. I know Eleanor as a theater artist. I know Jackie as both. And I knew you primarily as a theater artist coming into dance. Obviously, we talked about the Gomeshi effect because it involved dance. And we're talking about this because it involves dance. You also bring to this work your physicality from artist modeling. Can you talk a little bit about... first of all, I think it would be interesting for our listeners to know what that involves. it's a lot more involved and difficult than I think people assume. And also how that has influenced the way you move and how you use that towards choreographing.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to work on the Gomeshi effect with Amelia Griffin years ago because she is a contemporary dance artist and choreographer. And she recognized that when we did casting for the Gomeshi effect, while many of the actors had dance training, they weren't necessarily dancers. And so the movement that she created for that show was such that somebody who had, let's say, good physicality or movement could learn it, but it wasn't intense choreography that really only a professional dancer would be able to achieve. So we found that sort of like nice happy medium of creating really powerful choreography that was accessible to non-dancers. And so I learned a lot from her in terms of communicating things through movement. And at the same time as working on that show, I had also started doing what we call life modeling or art modeling. And I fell into it completely by accident. Somebody I knew was the model coordinator for the Ottawa School of Art. And at the time, I had just moved back to Canada from England. I was looking for work and I was offered a bunch of sessions there. And I was very nervous about it because, as you may or may not know, modeling for artists often involves being nude because that is the best way for them to study the human body and learn how to learn the foundations of drawing. So that was something that I was definitely not comfortable with in my earlier years, but that I was keen to sort of face that fear. So I gave it a try, and I found that I not only really enjoyed it, I was actually very, very good at it. And what it entails is basically staying still for assigned periods of time. So sometimes it would be a 1 minute pose and it could be something a little more athletic or dynamic that you're holding, or it could be a 5 minute pose, which might need to be, you know, a little less ambitious, or it could be a 20 minute pose or even a 1 hour pose in which you're standing or sitting or lying down for a while and people can do a more detailed drawing or painting of you. Sometimes I've done the same pose over several weeks where, you know, I'll take lots of breaks, but I'll be sitting for about 3 hours once a week and the same group of artists will be coming in to complete a painting, for instance. So this kind of work is, for me, very meaningful and very, creatively stimulating because I'm constantly inventing new ways of moving and new ways of posing that makes sense for artists and help them learn to draw or paint or to create things that they're proud of. And I've been doing this now since 2015, and I've worked in over 20 locations, maybe more than that now, but across Ottawa, Gatineau, in the Ottawa Valley, and I'll be doing a bit more when I go to Europe this summer. So it's one of those things that kind of, you're constantly like learning new things. It's just a great environment to be in. Everyone is very, very focused on their art and very glad to have somebody there who's willing to provide them with basically a blank canvas, you know, to you know, work on their skills. And so from there, it was a great opportunity for me to get to know my body and what it can do, which poses I can hold for long periods of time, ways I can twist my body, ways that can communicate feelings or ideas and things like that. And so that's something that I feel has given me a better sense of my own physicality and something I've brought into working on this show. And then the fun part about so usually the modeling I do is in an art studio. So it'll be like in the Ottawa School of Art, or Algonquin College, or like a life drawing session, some venue. But a lot of models I know also do photography, like art photography. And sometimes that will take place outdoors. So you'll be posing, you know, up against a tree or with a waterfall or in some kind of like interesting rock formation. And so I've been studying a lot of other models and the poses they do in those natural environments. And so when we're bringing this show into a park where we have those trees and other sort of natural set pieces, I would find ways to get my body to sort of either imitate the landscape or to complement it or to just interact with it in different ways. So I find that, you know, in doing this modeling work and in studying it, it really helped me to be able to interact more naturally with the environment we were being presented with.
It makes me think about like the little satellite of, you know, we talk about somatic practice being about the sensation of the movement that you're creating. And then there's this idea of trying to create a shape When I say satellite, I'm thinking about, you know, in your mind's eye, you're seeing yourself from outside, and you're creating an image, you're creating something. And I'm working, coming from a visual art practice, and kind of having, you know, I don't know, 12 students surround you and draw you from all angles, and you have this living, breathing satellite circling you and covering you from all sides and creating your shape with their own interpretation. What an interesting thing after years of practice to kind of have that, I imagine, a little satellite in your brain while you're putting this together. You're nodding. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, you can't see yourself, so you have to just know yourself well enough to be able to imagine what it looks like. But I mean, there's different parts where there was this beautiful, beautiful oak tree that I was, you know, as part of the staging, I was told to stand next to for a period of time. And so I arranged my legs and I raised my arms so that it would be matching the flow of the branches up above, and just to create that. And again, the show is really about, you know, being women, and really part of that is our connection to nature. You know, we talk about Mother Nature. We talk about, in the show, we talk about bloodlines, about menstruation, about childbirth, about renewal, about the aging process. And all of that connects to nature and the ever flowing cycle of nature. And so to find those moments where we are connecting with the natural landscape around us, where we see the similarities between our bodies and in the trees that we're connecting with, I think that's very meaningful. And, you know, you mentioned that we're all wearing red in the show, whether it's a red dress or a red shirt or red boots, all kinds of, we all find lots of things that are red, and there's sort of red ties in certain trees around the park, so people can sort of find the path going through. And again, that connects to that whole idea of bloodlines. And also it's that classic image of the, you know, an advertising of the sensual woman wearing red and that kind of thing, and how we're sort of looking at those stereotypes of what a woman is and challenging them or questioning them at the very least, to say like, oh, do we belong to that? And if we do, can we be that and also this? And how there's this multiplicity of being, right? That we are not just stereotypes. We might look, you might make assumptions about us based on the way we look. But I mean, for instance, in the show and, you know, in my regular life, I have very short hair. It's shaved in the sides. It's what I guess you might refer to as a more queer haircut. But I talk in the show about how I love wearing dresses, which is very femme. So, people might say that I don't quite fit that stereotype, whatever that is. And I think, you know, all four of us, we challenge the stereotypes people have about women. And you know, Lola, for instance, who she's very well known as a dancer and movement teacher in across Canada and has a wonderful career. And, as described in our material, she lived the first six decades of her life as dutifully male until she came out as a transgender woman. And, you know, there's different, everyone has a different story in terms of, queerness and trans, as about, you know, when you came out and what it meant to you and the difference it made in your life. And Lola has her own very unique story that she shares that people might not expect, but she brings her truth and authenticity to it and tells it in a way that I think people will be able to better understand, you know, where she's coming from and why the transition happened when it did.
You have, I'm just thinking about these stories that you have, this audio that you have, is it going to live beyond the physical performance?
We've been talking about that, especially because it's so challenging doing an outdoor show. You know, at the time that we're recording this podcast, our skies are full of smoke, and it's unclear whether or not we'll be able to perform the remaining shows in this week. So anyway, but even before this happened, we were considering options because it's a show that means a lot to all of us and we want it to live on. And so, you know, Angela has this soundscape that's been created that could be listened to on its own as a podcast. But then we thought it, you know, it adds so much to have those visual components. And so we're talking about the possibility of making a book, either a virtual or a physical book, that would have a series of photographs from the performance alongside the text. Mm-hmm. So people, even if they couldn't see the show or if they want to just, you know, have memories of the show, they'll be able to look at it that way, because we've had some amazing photographers come and see the show and also some videographers, and they've created both sort of archival photographs, but also sort of more artistic, abstract-looking photographs. So I think a combination of those will be a really beautiful way of commemorating the work that we've all done together.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Something to look forward to. On the Tactics Facebook page, there's a bunch of quotes, and you've also done somebody's done a CBC interview about the show. So there's lots to read and see about it. But I just want to highlight this one quote from Jackie, because it just seems so on point. Being a woman is amazing, but it's also like we've gone through a lot. Do you have something in particular as a group that you want the audience to walk away with?
I think that the greatest service we can do for ourselves and for other women is to talk about what we've been through. Because to feel shame about our experiences, or to feel like they need to be hidden or stashed away or put on a shelf, doesn't do any good for anybody. And in my experience, the more that we share, and I say this if you're willing to share, because not everybody is, and that's okay if you need to, you know, keep things private. I understand that too. But I do see the benefit of sharing, because it encourages other people to do the same, so that fewer people are living in shame, you know? And I think that, you know, I'm going to be 37 this year. And even in the past year, I have discovered so much about myself that I had squashed in years prior that was bad for my mental health. It was bad for my relationships. It was not the way I wanted to live. But in being able to, you know, in working on this show, I've been able to really come to terms with some of those things that make me me, and that make me a good parent and make me a full-fledged human being. And so I think there's that constant sense of we're always discovering things about ourselves. And if we can pass that on to whether it's a younger generation or even older folks who are still trying to figure things out, I think that's a really wonderful thing that we can offer, is saying, hey, we are willing to share these really personal stories with you in a public setting, and it's okay. And it just gives other people the opportunity to do the same if they choose to do that. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. And what Jackie said in her quotes, it's interesting. It reminds me, and sorry to throw in a pop culture reference, but there's a great TV show called Sex Education. And all of the, it was like a group of young of girls, students in the show, who are put into detention, and they have to decide for themselves what they all have in common as women. And the only thing that they can come up with that they actually had in common, because they were all super different types of people, was that, yep, we have to put up with a lot. So I found that pretty funny. And so I think that in our show, we're saying, yep, we've all been through a lot. But we also say, isn't it wonderful that we can be there for each other with everything we've been through? And that that is the way we can move forward. It's just by hearing each other out, being there for each other, despite our differences, because of them, however you want to put it. And yeah, it's so cheesy, but yeah, we're stronger together.
Jessica, any final thoughts that you'd like people to know about this show, about the process, about you?
Well, it's funny. I think, especially when you do a show that has a bit of a different slant to it, like, okay, so we're in a park, people are moving around, we're listening to something, we have to bring our own earbuds, what? There's a lot of stuff. Just to let you know, we do provide the earbuds if you don't have any of your own. And it can be hard to to be excited to see a show when you can't quite picture it, or when you can't quite like figure out, you know, oh, is it going to be super interactive? I don't know. Like, how scary is it going to be? It's different. It's weird. It's all those things. The people who have seen the show so far, they come up to me and said, okay, that wasn't what I thought it was. It was better. Like, there were definitely people who came in and they were a bit nervous, but I think what people took away from it was like, wow, this is a powerful piece of theater. It's beautifully done. The folks in the show are tremendously dedicated, and it'll make you think. And it's inspiring, and it's not depressing. And there's so much joy. There's so much joy in it. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much, Jessica, for talking to me today. Oh, we've been speaking about Skin Songs, which is being presented as part of the Tactics main stage season this year, 2023. And the show runs until June 11th at Strathcona Park here in Ottawa. You can check out more information at tacticsottawa.com or
skinsongs.eventbrite.ca.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Dirty Feet. I'm Allison Elizabeth Burns. Music for Dirty Feet by Tristan Henry. Special thanks to Paula Flalo for ongoing support and guidance. And to past contributors for amassing an almost 200-episode archive available at dirtyfeetpodcast.com. Learn more about me at allisoneb.com. This episode was created thanks to my patrons.
To support the show and my other initiatives, visit patreon.com/AllisonEBDance.